It was on a Thursday when I next visited Uncle Fawcett. I found him in a wheelchair. Somehow, within a week's time, he had lost his ability to walk. Each time I would come to see him, he was a little less the man I had always known and a little more the boy he must have once been. I tried to coax him into eating his pudding and read to him from the Bible because he kept going on about hearing the story of St. Pete being swallowed by a whale. So I read him the story of Jonah. Finally, he fell asleep, so I decided to go on home. On the way out, I stopped at the nurse station to ask if there was a pop machine in the building. "Downstairs," a young little red-headed nurse said, "right through the door." So I headed down the stairs, but once at the bottom, I didn't see a drink machine, so I turned right and walked for a bit, coming up on a hall lined with patient rooms. Realizing I wasn't going to find the pop machine there, I turned to go. That's when I noticed a name on the door, Janet Fisher. I didn't know her. Out of curiosity, I looked at the other doors as I passed, none of them ringing any bells until I came to one that said, "Marion Ransom." What? No way. I did the unthinkable. I shoved the door open and entered the room. I had no idea what I would say to this patient. I need not have worried. A frail woman of about 35 with long auburn hair lay on her back, staring at the wall. Her mouth hung open and drool slid down her chin. A bouquet of roses sat on her windowsill, and little stuffed cats lined the shelf above her bed. Directly in front of her was a painting of a lake, our lake. It had been placed where she could see it without having to turn her head. A stack of children's books occupied a chair beside the bed. I ran back into the hall, trying to make sense of it. An orderly was coming down the hallway, pushing a lunch cart. "Excuse me," I said. "Marion Ransom. How long has she been here?" "About 7 years. You know her?" "Yeah, sort of. I didn't know she was in here, though. What happened to her?" He shrugged. "She was crossing the street up there by Ellie's florist when she was hit by a drunk driver. Suffered severe brain damage. Sad. She ain't even got the mind of a 2-year-old now. Poor girl. Breaks my heart to look at her. Pitiful thing is that they've already let the guy out on probation that did it. They should have locked him up and thrown away the key. It ain't right." "No, it's not," I said. "Will she get better?" He shook his head. "The way I hear tell of it, there ain't no hope of it. You must not be from around here. Everybody in this town knows old Danny Boy ran for sheriff when he heard that the state judge had let her kill her out. Man don't live around here, but old Danny, he works something fierce to bring down drunk drivers and the bootleggers that sell them the liquor." "Understandable," I said. "Say, were you looking for somebody in particular?" "No," I said. "I was visiting my uncle upstairs and wanted a pop. Got lost and saw that Marion was in here." He motioned with his head. "Pop machine is back that way, right next to the sunroom." I thanked him, got my drink, and went to sit on a bench under a shade tree in the parking lot. I sat there drinking my pop. I thought about Marion Ransom having the mind of an infant, about her being run over by a drunk driver, and about Daniel Ransom coming into her room and reading stories to her, about the toys and the painting. I suppose I had a lot of tears bottled up inside me. Tears for Cookie, who was nearly 500 pounds and struggling to breathe, and for Uncle Fawcett, who would never be himself again. But mostly for Marion Ransom, who was as bad off as Uncle Fawcett. Only she had been that way since she was 28 years old. A drunk driver had stolen her life and stolen Daniel Ransom's too. I couldn't change what had happened to the Ransoms, but I could treat those around me with a little more compassion, including Bob. It could have easily have been him in that home. I went home and fixed him all his favorite foods, pork chops, mashed potatoes, gravy, biscuits, and peach cobbler. I worked for over 2 hours on Bob's supper and laid out a VHS of his favorite movie for us to watch. I thought we could have dinner then, snuggle up on the couch. I wanted to tell him that I did appreciate him and that I did love him. As I was setting the table, I heard his bike coming up the road, heard him stop down by the bridge, heard him shuffling around out in his building. Then he came in, slammed the door behind him, and threw his helmet against the wall. "What's wrong, honey?" I asked. "What's wrong? Well, I'll tell you what's wrong. The whole damn world is wrong. Everybody down there at the chicken house is a son of a bitch. That's what they are, a chicken house full of son of a bitches." He was mad, but a chicken house full of son of a bitches sounded funny to me. I laughed. "Quit laughing at me, Cupcake. People have been laughing at me my whole life, and I'll be damned if my own wife is going to laugh at me, too. I want some respect, you hear me? I want some respect." "I'm sorry, Bob," I said. "What happened at work?" "That stupid head Tom, that's what happened. He thinks because he's my supervisor, he can stand over my shoulder and tell me how to do my job. They better not mess with me. I'll quit that damn job, I swear it. I'll quit." Tom came up to me and told me that I wasn't putting the pins in the cage doors right. "What's so bad about that? I mean, my boss is always telling me that I didn't do something right." "What's so bad about it?" "He did it in front of everybody. Now they're all talking behind my back, making fun of me. I know it. They act like everything's fine, but I know they're all lying son of a bitches. Every single one of them's going to hell. That's where they belong. I hope they all do. Hell, I hope the commies drop a bomb on the chicken house and blow it all to pieces." "Well, how about some supper?" I said. "What are we having?" "Pork chops and mashed potatoes." "I ain't hungry," he said. "I can't believe you'd fix me pork chops after the day I've had." I shrugged. "Sorry, I didn't know you had a bad day." "Well, I did, and I don't want pork chops. I'm tired of people laughing at me. They ain't seen what I've seen, and they don't know what I know."
"Well, if you don't want pork chops, then what do you want?"
"Steak."
"But you love pork chops."
"Not anymore. You don't know the way they mock me. I'm tired of everybody saying that Pork Chop McQuaid, he saw a UFO. He saw a plane go down. He's a nut job."
"That's what the government wants people to say about guys like me. Guys who've been seeing things and know the truth. They want everybody to think we're crazy. Then one day, when they're all locked up in concentration camps up yonder in the mountains and down there in the hollers, and all the people are living in little towns with soldiers patrolling them, then they'll know. They'll know I was right. Except it'll be too late then, Cupcake. You hear me? Too late. Anyhow, I'm tired of it. And I don't want pork chops. I want steak. I deserve a steak."
"Then you'll have to go kill a cow, because we don't have steak."
"Looks like I have to do everything around here. You can't even buy the right things at the grocery store."
I laid the dish towel on the counter. "So much for a pleasant evening. I'm sorry, Bob. I wish I could do something to make it better for you."
"Don't talk to me like I'm a kid," he said. "You stop talking down to me. I'm the man of this house, and it's going against the word of God for you to disobey me or to talk to me like I don't matter. You're mean to me. You know that? Go to hell," he said.
He walked out the door, slamming it so hard that our wedding picture, the only picture he had ever allowed me to hang, fell off the wall and broke. I ate my supper, holding my chin up and tears back. I don't even know why I ate. Maybe it was that doing something normal helped me to keep some measure of my sanity, if I had ever had any in the first place. There were times that I wondered. I wasn't sure what normal was, and if I had ever been remotely close to it. Why could Bob not be happy? We had a good life, really. But he was seldom happy, and no matter how hard I tried, I never did the right thing. Did he not understand the grand scheme of things? That we could be like Daniel and Mary and Ransom, taken away from each other at the drop of a hat? Why would he not learn to cherish our moments together? I knew Bob was out in his shed. I knew better than to bother him. After supper, I took a bath. When I came out of the bathroom, he was on the couch. "I'm sorry, honey," he said. "Forgive me. I'll try to quit blowing up at you."
"Want your supper now?"
"I already ate it."
We started watching Road Warriors, but halfway through the movie, Bob paused it and got to going on about how all the politicians were going to plunge us into a post-apocalyptic world. We never got to snuggle, and I never got to tell him about Marion Ransom or about how Uncle Fawcett was doing, and when I mentioned Cookie, he called her a lazy-ass heifer, so I didn't say anything else to him.